Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Okay, so let's talk to Dr. Mark Sala then. Normally we visit with Dr. Copen, but Dr. Copen isn't with us today, and Mark Sala is. And I had your title here. Mark, let me see if I got this right. You are the co-director of the Northwestern Medicine Comprehensive COVID-19 Center. Do I have that right?
That's correct.
Thanks for joining us. What kind of a doctor are you, and what's your specialty? And I guess it's changed now because we didn't have COVID to sort of exclusively work on in the past. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am a pulmonologist and intensive care unit doctor. Previous to, I suppose, the pandemic, my specialty and focus is on adults living with cystic fibrosis. And as the ICU is filled up during the pandemic, we knew that there would be a really big need for helping people after the onslaught of the many cases we were having. And so the Comprehensive COVID Center was really what was formed to kind of take care of all the individuals who would be hospitalized, not hospitalized, and all the people suffering from things long lasting from it.
This conversation is sponsored, by the way, by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. So then are we talking long haul, or what are we talking about here? I mean, most people have COVID and get over it. If they're hospitalized, eventually, hopefully, they come home. So what do you do?
Right. So the spectrum of what happens after someone gets an acute COVID infection, you're right, absolutely. The majority of people don't have long-lasting symptoms. And in fact, of course, a good portion of people who get COVID never knew they had it,
yep.
As we know from epidemiologic data. So the individuals that do get it, it ranges the spectrum from those who end up with really terrible lung disease after they had a long course in an intensive care unit, versus some people never need to be hospitalized and kind of just never quite got better after their mildish infections, and they kind of plateaued. And that's really where the holy grail of things is right now, is to figure out how to get people feeling better and kind of figure out what the trajectory is on individuals who are feeling really not themselves from a shortness of breath standpoint, from brain fog, from all sorts of different symptoms that can plague them afterwards.
Yeah. So are you guys busy?
Yeah. I think what's really changed is not so much the number of patients that we see in the recovery clinic that we have, the COVID center. I think what's changed is that we don't have as many individuals who come to us having been in the ICU. I think that certainly has, in a good way, not become what we're seeing anymore. I no longer have the individuals coming in who spent 4 months in the ICU, and now we're trying to take care of them. And moreover, now it's individuals who find that they have had a non-hospital level infection, and then we're seeing this kind of individual who is still short of breath, maybe has lower oxygen, but maybe not, and all sorts of a myriad of symptoms that still brings people in. So the numbers have not really changed so much as what we say, the phenotype, or the kind of patient we're seeing.
Are you seeing people who still don't have taste and smell?
That's become, I think that sort of not disappeared, but that became a lot less frequent with the Omicron type variants. We definitely saw that early on with Alpha and the Delta variants. It was very frequent. In fact, it was one of the most reliable symptoms when someone got COVID. And then as vaccines rolled out, I think as Omicron became the dominant variant, that the loss of taste and smell was not so much something that we could really use as our litmus test anymore.
What do you make of the president saying the emergency is over on May 11th? That strikes me as kind of a random date. And what does that mean anyway?
Yeah. You never thought you could arbitrarily define the end of an emergency of a pandemic,
yeah.
Right?
This
1 a.m. in the state, right? So, I suppose that this is a reflection of, the policy making and the general feel that whatever has come to fruition for where we are with this pandemic is now no longer going to be described as an emergency. I mean, certainly we're not, this is not what it was, in the spring of 2020, that is for sure. I do worry a little bit about the tone that sets for individuals who, you know, are still getting COVID, people who are immunosuppressed and really don't have the ability to have that luxury of calling a pandemic no longer effectively important. And you know, for individuals who are still getting the long COVID, as I was describing earlier.
I suppose it also means that you're on your own now. I mean, I was thinking the other day when I got my boost or when we've randomly gotten tests. Well, actually, sometimes the tests I didn't have to pay for, sometimes I did. But obviously, all of my vaccinations and boosts have been for free. And I love that. It just couldn't be any easier. I wonder if that will end then in May.
Yeah, you wonder about the, you know, the trade-off there with, you know, if you have fewer people willing or able to get a vaccine because it's no longer as accessible, then what is your trade-off in those individuals who are now going to wind up sicker or in the hospital because that was just not as readily available to them?
Dr. Mark Salas, the co-director of the Northwestern Medicine Comprehensive COVID-19 Center. Again, I'm just impressed that there is such a thing where there wasn't a few years ago. Is this indefinite? Do you think that that group will be necessary 5 years from now? Is that the sort of thing we're going to have for a while, Doctor?
Yeah, I think the research focus is on how to prevent this. Of course, we have many people with the outcomes of having their acute COVID infection be prolonged and have all sorts of symptoms that, you know, have rendered people not really able to kind of get back to their lives. I think the focus will be on prevention and treating those who already have it. There is, unfortunately, despite really concerted efforts to research this, it's sort of the nature of having something completely novel, not only in a virus, but also in a phenomenon like this, and something that can, you know, a virus kind of make such a long haul, so to speak, on individuals. So yeah, there's been a lot of work ongoing, and it's certainly not for lack of effort that we're still a little bit empty-handed in terms of treatments for this.
I'm one commercial behind. I want to read this, excuse me, and then we'll pick it up in a minute with the question I asked you before the break, was what do we know about infant or child mortality as a result of COVID? I understand that it's a leading cause of death among small children, although the incidence is still relatively low. All of that in a minute. First, a message from our friends at Norman Mechanical Plumbing Services. Have you noticed that your water has a rusty color? Maybe your energy bill has spiked. Most homeowners aren't well acquainted with their water heater issues, but the plumbers at Norman Mechanical are the plumbing experts, the best in Chicagoland. If your water heater is over 10 years old, it might be time to get a new one. No one wants to be without warm water, especially these days. I don't like being without warm water any time of year. If you've got water heater concerns, call Norman Mechanical, 847-489-9592. You always speak with a live local plumber, 24/7. 847-489-9592. We say store that in your cell and name that contact plumber. There are other contractors out there that fix everything. Norman Mechanical fixes one thing, and they're the best at it. They take a lot of pride in being the best plumbers in Chicago. For water heater service or emergency repairs, any hour of any day, call 847-489-9592. 847-489-9592. 9592. Okay, Doc, back to you. What about kids and COVID? And are we certain that getting them vaccinated is 100% safe? What about all of that?
To be fair, I really didn't know prior to seeing that headline that children had such a that the relative risk of having COVID infection and mortality from that was so high. I think we all sort of take for granted that you know, kids are able to pull through things, and that, you know, that on absolute numbers, children are just less likely to die.
I'm going to read that to you again because I did misread it. I said leading cause, and double check here. COVID-19 has become a leading cause, the eighth most common cause of death among children in the United States. Children are significantly less likely to die from COVID than any other age group. Less than 1% of all deaths since the start of the pandemic have been among those 18 and younger, and yet it is still the eighth leading cause of death among children. So anyway, talk to me about all of the efficacy of the vaccine and the danger to them of COVID itself.
Yeah, so in absolute terms, individuals, pediatric age group, so 18 and under, has such a low mortality rate in general compared to adults that when you have something like COVID that does affect them on a relative basis, then you have the difference here where it becomes the eighth leading cause among this age group. So again, the absolute risk is low, but then kids are pediatric age group is has overall less mortality. So it seems to me that with the vaccine efficacious and low risk, that I feel like this is such a preventable statistic. And I know that when you look at the especially five and under age group for the vaccination rates, it's very, very low in terms of the number of children in that age group who have gotten it but still qualify to get it. So I think the message is pretty clear is that for a preventative strategy with a good safety profile, I think it seems like something that we should have more focus on.
Hey, John Williams, has the doctor heard of people developing numbness and pain in their calves, their ankles, their feet after having COVID, perhaps similar to peripheral neuropathy? Don't know what that is, but what do you know about that, doctor?
Yeah, no, I have heard this before. It's certainly not among the most common of symptoms after COVID, but I have heard of peripheral neuropathy-like symptoms where you have numbness, tingling, pain in the arms or legs. Again, it doesn't rank among the more common symptoms, but it is not unheard of. And interestingly enough, COVID itself can make diabetes worse as well. So you have that to kind of deal with at the same time. So this is something that has been described before.
And one last thing, though, all of these various symptoms, then can you treat the symptoms? I mean, you don't have an operation or a drug to give somebody to cure the lingering effects of it, whatever they are, do you?
No, and I think that's exactly part of the point, is that the spectrum of symptoms is very, very wide. And a lot of different individuals have different constellations of symptoms. And so that's why a lot of the focus is on either a preventative measure when someone gets the acute infection to try to prevent a lot of this, or figure out a unifying underlying reason that perhaps a persistent viral reservoir in these individuals can be maybe targeted and treated to help really take care of a lot of different types of symptoms for one person.
It's good to know there is this thing he does. Dr. Mark Sala is the co-director of the Northwestern Medicine Comprehensive COVID-19 Center. Doctor, it's nice to meet you. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Really my pleasure. Thank you.
Indeed.